University Broadcast Studio. It's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
All right. Welcome to Hour 3 of the program. Great to have you with us, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you're doing good today. This news just coming in. Looks like the airlines are going to require you to wear a face mask. So if you, this is Delta, American, United, and if you do not wear a face mask on the airplane, you will be banned. So this is what the, this is the new policy they're looking at as this crackdown on our civil liberties spreads across the country faster than the coronavirus. Here in Memphis, Tennessee, where we broadcast this radio program from our flagship station, our Southern Command of the program, the City Council late last night voted to force people in Memphis, Tennessee to wear a face mask. Now, I'm just going to throw this out here. If you don't know anything about Memphis, yeah, we have a lot of shootings here. Yeah, no, that's not what I want to talk about. Yeah, we have a lot of robberies here. No, I don't want to talk about that. Yeah, I know. Yeah, we've got a lot of, yeah, I understand. We got a lot of problems, but that's not what I want to talk about. No, now they're going to force people in the summertime to wear these face masks. Do you know how hot it gets in Memphis, Tennessee? Do you know how humid it gets in Memphis, Tennessee? Did I say humid? Bill Maine, did I say humid? Jeez, Lou, I said humid. My apologies. Humid. That's my, I lived above the Mason-Dixon line for 15 years, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes it slips out. It gets hotter than blue blazes around here. And I'm really concerned about how many people across the country, especially here in Memphis, are going to keel over from heat stroke because they're being forced to wear a face mask so they don't get the coronavirus. So anyway, here in Memphis, Tennessee, they're telling us now, our city leaders, the duly elected Nazis here in this city, that we have to wear face masks. And if we do not, we're going to get three warnings. And if we are caught without a mask, on the third warning, we may have to do, I don't know, community service or pay a fine. It's ridiculous. I'm not wearing a mask. I'm flat out, I'm not wearing a mask. I hope one of you good people will bail me out if they come a-calling. But no mask for Todd Starnes. 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. Want to go right to the Liberty University Newsmaker line. Our good friend Jeremy Dice from First Liberty Institute. Jeremy, hope you're doing good today.
I'm doing great, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Interesting story up on FoxNews.com from our good friend Caleb Park. I want to read the opening sentence, and I'm going to let you take it from there. A blind woman in Rhode Island was banned for 2 years from a public park and library because she shared her Christian faith. Really, really, Jeremy Dice, really?
This really happened? It really and truly did. In fact, the police reports are within our charge of discrimination that we've made against the Westerly Library and Wilcox Park there in Westerly, Rhode Island. And hey, look, here's the story. Gail Blair went blind at the age of 37. She had a degenerative condition and has been blind ever since then. She worked at Johns Hopkins as a nurse. She's just a very accomplished older woman now. And so since then, the thing that she's held on to before her blindness and has become even more dear since is her faith in Jesus Christ. And so the one thing that she's basically left to do when her husband would go to work and her kids have moved out of the house is that she would walk across the street to the park and sit on the bench. And then when some people would come by, she would hear them and say, "Excuse me, can I tell you about my friend Jesus?" And that's what she would do. She would strike up a conversation, and people would stop and listen. They would converse, or sometimes they'd just keep on walking, and she would offer them a copy of the Gospel of John. That's it. I think we've all run into those kind of conversations here and there, and none of us find any kind of offense out of them, at least in terms of how the library did. The library responded to this by saying, "Look, you can't have these conversations in our park because people are taking your Gospel of John pamphlets and then dropping them on the ground. In other words, you're littering on the ground, and so you've got to leave." I mean, of course, this was other people that were dropping them, not her that are dropping them on there. She wants them back anyway to give to other people. But so it resulted finally in the Library Association calling the police And they actually issued her a citation accusing her of accosting people as they walked by. Now, remember, this is a 63-year-old blind woman who stands accused of accosting parkgoers and forcing them to listen to a conversation about her faith. And so they trespass her and threaten her with arrest if she were to ever return. We think this is a place of public accommodation that is bound by Rhode Island law not to discriminate on the basis of religion or disability, and we believe they've done both. And so we're taking this to the Commission on Human Rights in Rhode Island saying this place of public accommodation has broken the law.
Yeah, this is pretty shocking. The fact that, first of all, they would do this to anyone, but much less a lady who is blind, is that's pretty repulsive. Again, it's evidence, Jeremy, that the war on religious liberty and the ability to practice your faith out in the public marketplace is under attack.
Yeah, look, and no governmental entity or even public park like this should ban anyone, let alone a gentle blind woman, for simply carrying on conversations about faith in a public park. It's unlawful discrimination to kick a blind woman out of a park for talking to others about her religion. And it becomes even more acute when you realize that this is the only trespass citation issued in the park ever. There's no other instance of people being issued a citation for passing out things in the park. There's been weddings there. There have been plays with playbills handed out in the public park. The government holds events there all the time, holding things out. No one else has been threatened with arrest for being in the park talking about anything, let alone their faith. So when sighted persons are free to cross into Wilcox Park and have conversations with anyone that they meet, but park officials call on the police and threaten to arrest a gentle blind woman who dares to have these conversations about her faith in the park, I mean, I can't help but conclude it's anything but discrimination.
You know what I'd like to find out? I wonder if this library has ever hosted the Drag Queen Story Hours.
That I don't know, but I do know that Gail used to take her grandkids over to that park and to the library, and she can't do that anymore because if she takes her grandkids over there, Grandma's going to be carted off to jail because she had one time the temerity to talk to people about her faith. This should not be happening in the United States of America. Look, the Library Association needs to really be asked this question. When did they stop kicking old blind ladies out of their public park? Because if they're still doing it, we've got a real problem. If they've ever done it before, it's still a problem. You've told a blind woman that it is better for her to stay inside of her house in the darkness by herself alone all the time rather than going outside and daring to engage others in a conversation about her faith. This is a wretched element of discrimination, and I hope the Commission on Human Rights in Rhode Island holds this Library Association and Park accountable for it.
I'm with you. All right, Jeremy, good work there. First Liberty Institute. Where can folks go to get more information and to lend you guys a helping hand, Jeremy?
Have them go to firstliberty.org, and when you're there, look at the charge of discrimination we sent and read the two police reports that are attached to it all, threatening Gail with going to jail if she steps foot back in that park again. I can't believe this is the America we're living in today, Todd.
Are you kidding, Jeremy? They just banned Aunt Jemima for crying out loud. The country's gone nuts.
Indeed. Well, I hope that we get some justice for Gail at firstliberty.org.
Absolutely. All right. Jeremy Dice, ladies and gentlemen. Jeremy, thank you. Always good hearing from you. Good guy.
Thank you.
You see what I mean, folks? Slap crazy. This report coming from the Daily Wire. According to various reports, an auto shop owner whose store just outside the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, now known as CHOP, it was Chaz, called 911 multiple times on Sunday night after a protester got into the store. The protester stole cash and lit a counter on fire. But police and the fire department never showed up, even though a mob broke down the fence guarding the store and demanded that the owner release the suspect. John McDermott owns Car Tender. He said he got a call that the suspect shattered a window, set fire to the front counter. So he went down there, and he and his son, and they were armed, and they were able to chase down the guy. And so Mr. McDermott put him on the ground. Now, they called 911, not one time, not two times, not three times, 19 times. They called 911 19 times in Seattle, Washington. Mason McDermott said the suspect sliced his blue jeans with a box cutter. The New York Post reports that soon other protesters arrived. So the police didn't show up because it's in the nation of Chaz or Chopper, whatever the hell they're calling it these days. And protesters showed up. And the video shows the mob knocking over a section of the fencing and confronting the store owners and demanding they release the original suspect. Mr. McDermott said he was heartbroken when the police, they finally said, so they're calling 911. They have this rampaging mob. They've got a gun aimed at the suspect. They don't know what to do. They're just trying, you know, they're just small business owners. And Mr. McDermott, finally, he's on the line again with 911, and they say, yeah, we got nobody to send you. You're on your own. So what do you do at that point? What do you do when 911, you call 911, you pay your taxes like a good, decent citizen, and 911 says, sorry, pal, you're on your own. The police chief said the officers responded, but they observed the location from a distance. What does that mean? It means they were not there. It means they were not doing their job, or maybe they were told not to do their job. The police chief said they did not see any signs of smoke or fire, and they did not see a disturbance, so they didn't go in. The fire department says, well, we don't know why we didn't respond. We'll have to look into it. They said, well, the owners put the fire out. Yeah, well, you know what? The owners pay you tax money to bring your hose on that big, shiny red fire truck and put out the fire. The country's gone slap nuts. That's all I can say. 844-747-8868. It's a toll-free number. You know what? No, I'm not wearing a mask. I'm a red-blooded American man. There's no reason I need to wear a mask. Would you wear a mask? It's not that they're asking you to. They're telling you to. You know, this is not Iran. This isn't Saudi Arabia. We're not supposed to walk around with mandatory head coverings. We're not under Sharia law. The last time I checked, we had something called the United States Constitution. And unless there has been some sort of an amendment added to the Constitution, has there been a constitutional convention in the states where now all of a sudden we're mandated under threat of persecution and prosecution that we have to wear a face mask? Has that happened? Because I don't know. Maybe it has, and I'm not aware of it. But I'm not wearing a mask. 844-747-8868. We'll be right back.
America's only fair and balanced talk radio host, Todd Starnes.
We had our good friend Ben Ferguson on the show. He got on to us about the Dixie Chicks. He said, soon you're not going to be able to, the Dixie Chicks are going to have to come up with a new name. And you know, Bill Maine, I thought that it was the problem word was chicks, so I suggested Dixie Gals. But as Ferguson rightly pointed out, that's not the problematic word. It's the word Dixie.
Yep. Sure is.
So I'm coming up with a new, as a matter of fact, we might want to go ahead and see if we can't just save and just bookmark this website address, because I have a solution to this. They should change their name to the Yankee Broads.
The Yankee Broads.
The Yankee Broads.
Would be the Yankee Broads.
Yeah.
The Yankee Broads.
Yeah, I got to throw some of your Brooklyn in there.
The Broads.
Yeah.
That's not working for me. It's not a good accent.
Yeah. Maybe next time.
Yeah.
It is what it is. By the way, speaking of that, Nathan's, the famous, the hot dog eating competition.
Yes.
So they're doing that, but they're making some changes because of the Rona. And this is a big deal. The Nathan's famous 4th of July hot dog eating contest in Coney Island, they've been doing this thing forever. And it's like a big deal. I mean, 10, 15,000 people come out. So they're still going to do it in spite of the coronavirus. But the and I want to read to you the if my computer would stop acting goofy. This is from James Walker, who is the senior VP for restaurants of Nathan's Hot Dogs, says that the country, the world, we have endured so much in the last couple of years that we'd be remiss if we did not use this moment to honor those who have done so much for us, which is why they are going to resume the July 4th competition. The first ever contest, 1916. Four immigrants gathered at the very first Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Stand in Coney Island, and they had a hot dog eating contest. So I think that's pretty awesome. Joey Chestnut is the reigning champion, if you're into the whole food, competitive food thing.
I've interviewed him.
Is that right?
He's a great interview.
I hear he's a nice guy.
He is, but he's a great interview because you ask him about all the different contests he goes and stuff he's eating. Yes, it's hilarious. It really is.
They're only going to have five contestants instead of 15, and no crowd. You won't be allowed to be there. You won't be able to. You'll have to watch it on TV. That kind of takes the fun out of it. I mean, the crowd is part of the whole thing. I remember years ago, Bill Main, when I was a reporter for Fox Radio, they sent me out there to cover this. And it is hotter than blue blazes out there on Coney Island, and you're stuck. There's no, you know, shade. You have all these people. It really is one of these like weird circus kinds of atmospheres.
I have a hard time eating a hot dog when it's that hot and keeping it down anyway. I couldn't imagine all they eat. But you know, the slogan there is never have so few eaten so much for the amusement of so many.
Well, that's a great slogan. Yeah. I mean, they have the circus people out. They have like the little midget folk. We can't say midgets anymore, can we? The little people. So they got the little people out there, and they have the aerialist. And there's this giant Frankfurter. That's what they call them, the Frankfurters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A huge, giant Frankfurter, which had been like suspended in the air. And there was this woman who was like idle. She was dressed in one of these circus outfits.
Sure, yeah.
And she was like a contortionist. So she mounted the Frankfurter, and she's doing these really inappropriate things to the hot dog. I'm not sure that made it on the ESPN, but the rest of us saw it. God and country saw it. I don't think she was a good Methodist church-going woman, if you know what I mean by me.
I will say this. Now that you're a radio station owner, keep this in mind. As someone who has conducted eating contests for the radio station, just make sure that you're wearing shoes and clothes you don't really want to wear again.
I completely agree with that.
I'm just saying I've had to be washed afterwards.
So anyway, to be honest with you, I don't think they needed to make any changes to the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. I'm not sure the virus could survive in that environment. That's what I was trying to get at. But you know, one of the weird things they do, this is the secret, the trick of the trade. They shove the entire hot dog, bun, meat, and all, into a glass of water, and then they shove it down the pie hole. That's how they do it. It's disgusting. All right, got to take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. You know, we're big Southeastern Conference football fans here on the program. Not so much the NFL, but we're big college football fans. University of Tennessee Vols, that's the team. But I know Bill Main, you guys in Georgia, you like what, Georgia Tech? Is that the...
How dare you?
the Georgia Bulldogs, you might have heard of them. Little SEC team, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the pups.
Athens. Yeah,
mm-hmm. The pups. Anyway, you know, the big question is: are they going to be able to have football games where we can actually go and watch the games? That seems to be the big debate.
Yeah.
Well, just try to keep away all those tailgaters who want to show up for the game. Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, that's
the Ivy League. You know, yeah, they'll do what they're told, but. Good luck. Good luck down. Good luck doing that down in Bama.
Yeah.
Country. The reason I ask that is our next guest has a very famous last name for Georgia fans. He has written a brand new book called Hope When Life Unravels. He is a pastor in Jackson, Tennessee, a good church going Baptist and Baptist pastor. Adam Dooley joins us on the Newsmaker line. AdamDooley.org is his website. Pastor, good to have you with us today.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
So are you related to Vince Dooley? That's the big question of the hour.
You know, not only am I not related, I am a Kentucky Wildcat fan, so I'm just going to throw that curveball in here.
All right. Hold on, Pastor Avery. Do not hang up the phone. Do not hang up the phone. So you've been in the football wilderness with all of us folks over at Tennessee.
You know, that's true, but we're hoping that we can keep building on the momentum we've had the last few years. We'll see about it.
Well, Pastor, let's talk about this great new book. It comes out in just a couple of days. You've got to be very excited about that. And, folks, you can get a copy on wherever you buy your books. You can go to AdamDooley.org, or you can also check out our Facebook, our live show blog at ToddStarnes.com. But tell us about Hope When Life Unravels.
Well, Todd, this book is nearly a decade in the making, and I'm so thankful to finally have it in print. It originated just from my personal journal because back in 2011, my oldest son, Carson, was diagnosed with leukemia. And he was treated at St. Jude Hospital there in Memphis for nearly 3 years. And I kept a journal of all that we went through and all that God taught us through that time, because I knew he would forget as he grew older all that he endured. And so that's where the idea began. And I just really felt like God could use those lessons to help other people. And that's why I wrote the book, Hope When Life Unravels.
You know, I have to imagine that even though this is a personal story for you, that so many other people will be able to relate to some of the concepts here. And really, as a nation, Pastor, when you think about it, I mean, we have been sucker punched as a nation for the past year or so. And there was a poll that came out a few days ago just talking about how people seem to be losing hope in things.
That's right. I never imagined when I completed the book that its release date would be so appropriate in light of what's happening in our nation. But what I try to do, Todd, is I tell in each chapter about something that happened to my son in order to raise a question that people from every walk of life ask at some point. So it's not really just a book about cancer and my son's battle. It is a book about the most common questions that people ask. Why does God allow suffering? How can I connect to God when he feels far away? Is suffering the result of sin? Questions like these that we all ask. And using his story, I am able to then turn to Scripture and do my best to answer those questions to encourage readers.
I'm curious how your son handled, these illnesses. Children are so resilient. But, again, you said you wrote this so that he could, so that he could understand some of the things, some of the spiritual concepts of this journey.
Yeah, he was 2 weeks shy of turning four when he was diagnosed with leukemia.
Wow.
And he finished his therapy just short of turning seven. And so there's much about that horrible time that he doesn't even remember, which again was my motivation for keeping the journal. But it's been fascinating. He has read the book, and in fact I have a book signing in Jackson, Tennessee this coming Saturday, and he has asked, Dad, can I go with you and sign the book also? So he'll be joining me. But he's read the book, and he is asking a lot of questions about what the Scripture says to answer these questions that we all raise. And it's like reliving the experience with him all over again, in one sense.
So what was that like for you? I mean, not you're a pastor. Most people come to you when they're going through these things with their families, and here you are dealing with this as a pastor.
Todd, I will tell you, everything I've ever preached was put to the test, and I don't mind to admit there were low points where I was angry with God, where I was frustrated with God. One of the things I talk about in the book is that it is okay to ask God why. I think a lot of times we feel guilty for asking that question. But in the book of Job, for example, Job, who suffered more than anyone outside of Jesus, repeatedly, in fact, over 20 times throughout the book of Job, he asked God why so many terrible things happened to him. And God never rebuked him. And so it really, it was a dark time. It's not a path I would have chosen, but it has added a dimension to my ministry that did not exist before, because I'm thankful to say I really believe the stuff I preach and teach to others. I found that things I've been saying for years were not just true theologically to me, but they were true in my experience, and that was very reassuring and comforting as a pastor and as I lead other people.
On the Newsmaker line, the Liberty University Newsmaker line, a friend of this program, Adam Dooley, he is the pastor of Inglewood Baptist Church in Jackson, Tennessee, and he has a brand new book that comes out just in a couple of days, Hope When Life Unravels, Finding God When It Hurts. I'm curious, I know our listeners want to know how Carson is doing now. How old is he, and what is he doing, and how's he feeling?
Carson will turn 13 years old in July, and you would never know he had leukemia. He's active in sports. He'll be going into the seventh grade this fall, and he's just a healthy, happy young boy, and he's doing fantastic.
Now, tell us about this book signing. You mentioned that you guys are going to be signing books this coming weekend in Jackson, not too far away for all you folks listening to us in Western Tennessee.
That's right. We're going to be at the Christian Publishers Outlet in Jackson, Tennessee, and be there from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, June the 20th. So anyone in the area, I would love to meet and sign a book for you.
And Carson will be there, too.
He will be there, too. So you can meet the real all-star. He said, Todd, Dad, you wrote a book about me. Shouldn't I sign it rather than you signing it? So there you go.
Well, forget that. I'm surprised he's not asking about royalties.
Yeah. Hey, don't mention royalties to him. I'm not sure
we'll
he
understands.
We'll
just keep that on the down low. Yeah. I love it. All right. Well, Pastor, congratulations. And I know you've written a number of books, but this one has to be very special to you. And folks, again, you can get that wherever you buy your books. AdamDooley.org if you would like more information about Pastor Dooley and his great ministry there at Inglewood Baptist Church. Pastor, I'm going to give you the final word.
Well, the final thing I'll say is at that website, AdamDooley.org, I'm also blogging about some of the experiences we had at St. Jude that didn't make it into the book. So check that out as well, and I think it'll be an encouragement to you.
Well, we love St. Jude Hospital and the great work they're doing, and of course, our great president and his family very involved in helping raise money, and so that they can do what they do, which is some incredible ministry across really the entire nation, not just here in the Mid-South. Pastor, thank you very much.
Todd, thanks for having me.
All right. Adam Dooley, the pastor at Inglewood Baptist Church. What a terrific story. Hope When Life Unravels. I should have mentioned this to the pastor, but years ago, he was pastoring in Texas and invited me to come out and speak to the congregation, had a chance to meet Carson. This was many years ago. And I knew that he was beginning to write that book. And now here it is. officially out, and you'll be able to get yourself a copy of it. Be inspired by this little boy's story, Hope When Life Unravels. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Todd Starnes.
Hey, we're going to have a great show tomorrow. Our good friend Andy Biggs, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, is going to drop by. Also, Congressman Chuck Fleischman from Tennessee, big baseball fan. And he wrote a terrific column saying America's got to have baseball. We got to get back to the ballpark. So that is on tomorrow's edition of the Todd Starnes Radio Show. All right, let's get to the phones. 844-747-8868. Let's go to Ben from South Carolina, listening to us on our Facebook live stream. Hi, Ben. What's going on? What's on your mind today?
Hi, Todd. Well, greetings from South Carolina, the home of smiling faces and beautiful places. This narrative about the weakness, lack of backbone by Christian leaders. I am very discouraged and disturbed by the silence of the Christian community, in particular those that have a platform in the pulpit. I do not know why they do not speak up and speak honestly. And it's really about honesty. It's either honesty or it's ignorance. Because there's plenty of information out there about the data that shows that there actually are more white males killed by the police than black males, but somehow they want to buy into this completely false narrative that police are killing black males. Plus there's only 300, it shouldn't be any, right? I mean, the tactics could change. I agree with that. But there's 300 deaths from police use of force per year in the U.S. That's about the same number as lightning strikes. Richard Johnson, Toledo University research study, anybody can look that up and see the fact-checked research study by Richard Johnson. There was a very good article that I posted on my church's website by Jason Riley of the Wall Street Journal, The Full Truth About Race and Policing, and along with the Richard Johnson research study. And it was quickly dismissed by pastoral staff, basically that, they didn't want that, type of argument, so to speak.
But Pastor, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, Pastor. So we had Ben Ferguson on earlier.
I'm not a pastor.
Oh, well, you're a good church-going. Well, as a Christian,
I'm a good church-going Christian. Yeah.
All right. As a pew planter, as they say. We had Ben Ferguson on earlier in the show, and there's this church in Memphis. And they're sharing stuff, Bible study material with the congregation, basically shaming white people and saying people who watch Fox News are radicalized. What do you tell people who go to that church?
They don't need to sit silently. They need to use their voice and have a backbone and speak out against that type of nonsense, which is what I tried to do. Here locally, there was, I go to a rather large community. It's a Southern Baptist church, conservative, I thought, and about 2,000 members or so. And their partner church across town called Grace Church, Greenville, South Carolina, Matt Williams is the pastor. He had a sermon about racial injustice, and it went through the whole narrative of how police brutality had brought up these issues, and that, all the problems in the black community are systemic racism, and that hard work got him, the pastor, where he is today. But it wasn't hard work that got him there, rather. It was the color of his skin, he said. And, you know, I just totally disagree with that. I mean, there are so many successful black people. If blacks continue to be told that, you know, there's systemic racism, that everybody's against them, their perception of that, their motivation to achieve, which they have and made great progress, you know, is going to be hindered.
If I were a minority hearing that kind of nonsense, I would be personally offended by that.
Yes, I would.
It's just so disgusting. And it troubles me, and I hate to do this, but we're coming up on the top of the hour, so we're gonna have to wrap it up here. But to your point, I get what you're saying, and it troubles my spirit and my heart when I hear these pastors that are out there trying to cast the blame on a particular mm-hmm. people group for something they have nothing to be apologetic about.
Which is not a single racist.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, look, thank you for calling in, and thanks thanks for listening, Ben. We appreciate that, and give us a call back sometime.
Thank you for Kayla, all that you do, and enjoy your show.
Thank you very much. All right. Avery, very excited. You know what I'm about to do?
What are you about to do?
I'm about to turn off this microphone.
Oh, yeah.
Walk out of this building and drive to Hattie B's. Ooh. Which is a famous hot chicken place here in Ooh. Memphis, Tennessee.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I have been dying for one of these sandwiches for like a week now.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out which heat level I can handle.
In my opinion, I'm not a super spicy guy. I don't enjoy too spicy food, but I always just, I mean, there's no shame in getting mild. There's no shame in getting mild. If you want to enjoy it.
I can't do that. You can't go to a hot chicken joint and get mild chicken.
Well, I mean, if you want to enjoy the flavor and not die at the same time, then get mild, because that's what I do.
You have southern, which is no heat, mild, which is a touch of heat, medium, warm it up, hot, feel the heat, damn hot, which is the fire starter, and then the worst of all, you actually get a burn notice with it. It's called shut the cluck up.
That's creative marketing right there.
I will file a report tomorrow if I can feel my lips. So, all right, folks, a crazy show. Get out there. Have a great day. We're going to do this all over again tomorrow. And, folks, go hug Aunt Jemima. This is the Todd Stern Show.